You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Where is Charlie's mother?
Oh, well, apparently she's working nights. But she left a note. Here's dinner's in the oven.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves.
Make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 56 for the 17th of September, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. I was waiting for that thing to tick over. We're in kind of beta mode right now.
We are. We are live at this moment. There's nobody in the chat room, though, because we basically said that we're still in beta. So we are doing this as a live show, as if we were live. Everything is live. And if you really want to, you can go back and watch the video of this, because it will be on the site. But this is the new studio. It's a lot smaller than we used to. But this is the new studio. We're here. But this is literally the first time we've turned everything on. So it's
for people out there, it's probably not going to look that much different because you've still got that thing kind of in the background.
No, I've still got my
kind
toys.
Of very similar and things. So I mean, imagine for them, it's not going to be much different.
I think we may have to do something about the pink.
We should probably fix
I have a blue screen we might bring down or something to fix that up. I'm not sure. Richard was also supposed to be on the show this week, but he's running chores and time just got away from him basically. But we're here and we're doing it, and this will go out on the feed as normal, and this week's a good show. I think we're going to have a good show because I've got a good film to review this week. All right, so this is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. This week we're going to review the new remake of Fright Night. And for those who haven't seen the original film, that opening clip was from the original Fright Night. We're also going to check out, there's not a lot of news, funnily enough. It's been a very, very slow news cycle. But we do have a couple new trailers that we thought we'd have a look at. We've got one that I'm very, very interested in, which is Cameron Crowe's new film. And Cameron Crowe did Almost Famous and Say Anything and so forth. He's got a new film called We Bought a Zoo. With Matt Damon, and so we'll have a look at that trailer. And Josh, the first official, not teaser, but the first official full-length trailer for Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1 has come out this week.
Thank Christ, because I've been waiting for
that. I was waiting for that one, so we'll have a look at that too so we can make fun of it. We've also got a brand new list of five, and this week we're going to do a list of five of our favorite horror characters.
Yep.
Now, this is Josh's list, and I think it's genius, so we're going to go with this. So this isn't about the films as such. It's not even about the actors. It's just about a particular character that may have stood out.
These don't have to be the bad guys.
No,
these are just
absolutely
the guys that were just really standout-ish.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see who's on your list, so I'll be very keen for that. For those who haven't been keeping up, we did renumber the episodes recently. This, in old money, would be episode 148, but in the new numbering, we'll actually stop doing the old numbering soon, and then all of the pack episodes will be renumbered from 1 through 50-something. That's just, I haven't had time to do it yet. But we are officially now episode 56. And the move is complete. We are now officially shifted out to the new studio, new house, and everything else. We're still cleaning up the old place.
Yeah.
And there's still a bit to do out there. But we finally, I think we brought, there's one more load that we have to fill the car with, just stuff from the shed, the laundry shed at the other house, and then we're done. We're finally here. So it's been a very, very long move. I'm very, very tired. So bear with us.
Yeah. Well, look, I've been away on what was a holiday, but I found holidays, unfortunately, usually when you come back from them, mean that the week that you come back is about twice as harrowing as it usually would be. And plus, being in the industry we're in, I got home to about 230 emails and about 60 people I need needed a call. So I know what you mean, man. Exhaustion is something.
Oh, and very... I was talking to Richard the other day, and I said I feel so outside of the loop right now,
dude. Yeah,
it's been so little put up on the site. There's been,
you know, it's funny because I mean I know this is kind of talk we would usually have off the camera, but when you rang me a couple of days ago and was talking to me about all the films we're going to see next week, I was like, we're seeing that.
Yeah,
that's on. What?
Everything. I know.
Completely out of the loop.
So, for everybody who has bared with us through this move and everything, thank you so much.
Yes,
and I promise you, over the course of the next couple of weeks, everything will stabilize and become normal. And next week, for those who are listening to the audio only, next week will be a proper live show. We will be doing a proper live show. Normal schedules back. Everything will be back to normal. So let's just bear with us. Okay. Now, we hope we'd actually, the reason why I say this is because we'd hoped to be back to normal this weekend, if you remember. Well, that was the 17th was the date we put on there.
Yeah.
And it's taken longer than we expected to get everything moved. But we're here. We're done. So, as I say, from next week, September 24th, you can watch us record this show live, roughly starting about 1:30 p.m. on a Saturday, Australian Eastern Standard Time. That's UTC+10, geekactually.com/live. And you'll also be able to watch the Geek Actually show, which starts roughly around 12 p.m. So both our shows will be back next week. All right, with all of that said and done and out of the way, Josh, what have you been watching?
Man, I've had a freaking big week for it because I've been in game mode for so freaking long that when I came out the other end and I'm ejected out into this period, like there's a lot of previews coming up, but there's kind of a gap for a couple of weeks before we start getting releases again. So I'm slowly slogging out a few games, but essentially I've got some time now. And so I've just been burying myself in everything I can. I went through and did every single Halloween movie.
Which
was an interesting experience.
Like all the way up to 6 or whatever it is?
Oh, yes, and man. I'm including 3 as well. What the fuck was that film about?
You know, there's something about Season of the Witch, though, that kind of tickles me because it's completely not Halloween.
Dude, and the thing that I love is just that there's no explanation to that film at all. It's like we have these devices which can do stuff to people remotely through TV signals that we got the basis for how to make them out of a giant rock, which is never explained, which somehow has the ability to turn people into spiders, snakes, and bugs. What? What? What does that even mean?
Now,
from
memory, and I'm only going from memory here, I'm looking him up right now because whenever I use my memory, I always make mistakes. So from memory, it's directed by one of John Carpenter's friends. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because, look at this. They're planning a Halloween 3 remake.
Oh, well.
Wow, why would they do that, dude? That's bad news. The reason why I bring that up is because I think what happened, my guess would be, they said, he's going to make his directorial debut.
Yeah.
And I think it was Nick Castle. This is why I'm holding up here while I'm trying to look up his name. No, Tommy Lee Wallace. Sorry, it's Tommy Lee Wallace. Okay. Tommy Lee Wallace, wanted to make his directorial debut. John Carpenter produced Season of the Witch, and I think he basically said, I'll put my clout behind you, let you direct your film. And I think they just slapped the Halloween name on it just so that it would have some sort of marketing.
There are only like 2 references in the entire thing, and one of the references is in a bar. The movie's playing in a background, and I was like, cheap. And then later on, he leaves them tied up in a room with it playing on the TV.
Cheap.
And I'm just like, that's even worse. Like, that is a horrible, horrible film, and I never want to watch it again.
See, I would rather watch that, though, than the remakes.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, man, 4 is a fucking tour de force.
I
love 4. I think 4 was probably the best one part 1. Like it took it in the right directions. It somehow managed to like hold together even with, you know, 3 probably weighing it down quite heavily. It starts basically straight after 2, I think. And it just goes. And that's the great thing about Halloween. It's like all one
We talked about it on the show a few weeks ago, and I said when I went to see 4 at the cinema, John Carpenter by this stage had nothing to do with the film, but I just remember that opening scene in the rain where the gurney gets pushed out of the hospital.
It's interesting because the color scheme to that intro is really odd as well. It's almost cartoony.
It is.
In a really good way, though. Like, it's an interesting shot mechanic, and I would love to track down whoever's involved in that and pick their brain, because it's like they maintain this really... They bring it back to life by just letting it be what it is.
And then you got John Carpenter's original theme kicking in the background.
When they're driving away.
Yeah, that works. Yeah, that just works.
Because I remember you saying that before on the show, and it's like when it started off, I was like, right on, Dave. Yeah, that is exactly true.
And then
true.
The series kind of went downhill again.
Five was a nightmare of concepts in my mind, because it's like it introduces this character who's constantly coming in and out of shot, who's this dude in a leather jacket with a tattoo on his hand. Who never gets explained. It's just the movie ends and that character is never seen in full detail and never explained. And apparently the one I haven't got to yet is six. Yeah, six. That'd be right.
Six, yeah.
Yeah.
Six is the one, as Richard pointed out, is the one that most people haven't seen.
Yeah. And I started watching it and I can't get through it. I've tried twice now. I will finish it. Yeah.
And the series took us an upturn spike with H2O.
Which is, look, I really can't wait to get to that film now, because after watching the whole series again, I think that film will have a lot more
power. It does. It has a sense of closure to it.
Mm.
And then they made more, which they shouldn't have done. They should have ended on HBO. Mm. On HBO. H2O. So I have a head cold as well. Did I tell you that? All right. So,
I will quickly go through the rest because I'm taking up too much time here. Started watching a TV series called Sanctuary. Very interesting concept. Very bad CG. Very sci-fi. If
have been made for the Sci-Fi Channel.
Exactly. So that's not necessary, but out of the things that I've seen on the Sci-Fi Channel, it is probably one of the most intriguing things I've seen. I didn't say good. I will come back to you about whether or not it's good.
Fair enough.
Still slugging through Monster. Monster is still amazing. Go out. Get it. About to start watching American Gothic, which I never got around to seeing, but after a conversation with somebody, I was like, that is happening.
Yeah, that's Sam Raimi produced series. Yes. Very good.
And also just a really high rating on IMDb for a TV series.
Cole is fantastic.
I mean, but he's Gary Cole.
He's a legend.
He's Gary Cole. Okay, so there's that, and apart from that, I don't think I have seen anything else at the moment. No.
The big one for me is I've been slogging my way through the Blu-rays of Star Wars. My son and I basically are watching one a night, and we started in chronological order, so we've now finished the prequel trilogy, 1, 2, 3. And it's really interesting going back and watching the prequel trilogy, because it just highlights how bad that series is.
Oh, dude. And I have lost all respect for the man, because there has been something that has come out to all stores in Australia, which says that you are not allowed to play Star Wars on TVs or you will be sued. Yep, and that is coming from where you know it's coming from. That's Lucas.
That's actually a very interesting thing to note, because I was actually in a retail store yesterday and they were playing it.
Exactly.
Store.
And the memos only came through yesterday.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, and this is the
thing.
They had
a whole display of the boxes around the TV.
Exactly. And dude, honestly, I love the way somebody said it. Somebody in our store said, that is officially it. Lucas will never get another dollar from me, because that is the most fucked up thing you could ever
do. That's really stupid.
Dude, on the day that came out, it was one of the best days I've been at work, because everybody was in a good mood. Star Wars was everywhere, and we were just like the posters were up and we were setting things. Everybody was in a Star Wars mood and everybody was quoting the lines, and it was just like, it was an event to have it back
and
in
then
stores. And then just to have that happen, it's like, that's it. Officially, the man will never get another dollar from me.
All right, well, he got my dollar, so let me just put in my 2 cents here.
Sorry, Dave.
That's all right. So I've watched the prequel trilogy now, so we're going to start the original trilogy now. Now, what's interesting is, of course, in the prequel trilogy, there's fuck all changes, because they're basically...
they're perfect.
Well, they're made the way he wanted to make them, so they're as done as they're going to be, except for the replacement of Yoda in Phantom Menace, which is actually a welcome change and works a lot better. And it's a seamless, perfect removal of that horrible glass-eyed pedo puppet and replaced with the CG Yoda, and it's perfect. I mean, it's just perfect.
That's great.
Aside from that, I don't think there are any changes in the prequel trilogy, aside from the fact that it's in Blu-ray quality and it looks sensational. I mean, it just looks amazing. That opening battle scene at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, episode 3, is stunning. You feel the movement and the color and the depth, and it's just amazing. But it's the biggest problem with that series is A, the scripts suck, and B, Hayden Christensen and Jake Lloyd, anybody who played Anakin, basically, was terrible. It was a terrible story arc. It was a terrible character. It was a whiny, horrible character. And it's really interesting watching them again, what they did with Natalie Portman, because she starts as a strong character, becomes a stronger character in Attack of the Clones, and then they basically just wrote her off in the third one, and she becomes this whiny little thing that you sit there and go, what the hell are you doing with this character, you know? So, look, the third one is the best of that prequel trilogy, because at least it goes into dark places, and you know, you at least, but you know, it's what it is. And you sit there and look at it and go, it's a visual spectacle, visual and audio spectacle, visual and oral, I should say, spectacle. But it's just, there's not much of a film there. And you sit there and go, God, I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking, the biggest issue with that film is the fact that he told that story. One of the things I love about the original Star Wars is the fact that he did start at episode 4. The idea of just starting in the middle of a story, you know, I love that. And I love the fact that they tell you stuff that happened in the past, but we never saw it, you know? And I think that's genius. So if you wanted to go back and make 3 more films, what he should have done is gone off and done another story set in the same universe, but not told any of the story that we were already told about, because the prequel trilogy suffers from all prequel problems, which is, we know what's going to happen. There's no, like the final lightsaber fight in Revenge of the Sith is staggering. It's an amazing lightsaber fight. They're fast and they're jumping and they're fighting and they're, it's just amazing, right? But we know exactly what's going to happen. So there's no suspense to that. We know that Obi-Wan is going to win. We know that he's going to get shredded because he has to get put into the armor, you know? So it's like, we know what the conclusion of this fight is, you know? And that's the problem with prequels. We know the conclusion. Yeah. So he shouldn't have gone and done a prequel. He should have just done another story in that universe. And then he could have had Darth Vader or Yoda in the background, because they're background characters in that universe.
Very much like the... Because that's one thing. The storylines to the... The storylines to the games around the Star Wars world are really quite good. Like, especially
Force Unleashed
is a really cool storyline. And you've, like you say, you've got those background characters, and it's like, that should have been the film.
And that anchors you into the universe, but you don't need to tell. We didn't need to know Darth Vader's, and look, quite frankly, look, spoilers for Star Wars, I think everybody knows this already, so I don't think it's a real spoiler, but let's face it, the prequel trilogy, because my son actually said, if you'd never seen Star Wars, if you were coming in completely cold, and you watched it from 1 to 6, you know, you probably wouldn't hate the prequel trilogy so much. I said, no, but the problem is, one of the greatest reveals in cinema history, one of those oh fuck moments is in Empire Strikes Back, when he says, Luke, I am your father. Everybody in the cinema just went, what? You know? But the problem is, with the prequel trilogy, we now know that. And so that line has no impact anymore. So you've completely diluted what was one of the most amazing reveals in cinema history, you know? And so you sit there and go, yeah, so you've kind of just killed your own thing. So for anybody who's coming in fresh, you've killed it for them. You know? So that's my problem. Anyway, tonight we start episode 4. So tonight we start the good trilogy.
So you'll probably be in a better mood when we see next.
Yes, except now we get all the changes. Because now all the changes start to come into effect, because this is where he's been playing around with on the... So I'm curious to see it. I know Richard watched episode 4 last week, and he's not here to talk about it, unfortunately, but I did hear he said that the changes aren't entirely distracting, but he said that it was just glorious to see it in Blu-ray. He said it looks amazing. So I am curious to see that. All right, but that's basically been what I've been watching this week, because it's been a hell of a week. But yeah, look, it's worth it. If you are a Star Wars fan, if you do like visual spectacle, and if you really like just Blu-ray beauty, I mean, these are like the best Blu-rays ever produced, you know? And they just look stunning. So, and if you buy the full box set, you also get 3 Blu-ray discs of bonus features, including... Ironically enough, well, not ironically, but including, strangely enough, I should say, 90 minutes of spoofs. It actually, on the box, it actually says, including 90 minutes of spoofs. I thought that was very interesting.
Maybe they're hoping if they juggle in front of you, you won't notice how bad the changes are.
Maybe. All right, let's move into this feature review. And this week we're going to do, as we said, Fright Night. And we should give it its full title, I guess, which is Fright Night 3D. Because it was shot in 3D, not post-converted, and it looks fantastic in 3D. So we say Fright Night, directed by Craig Gillespie, Australian boy. So there you go. And just a note to the Slash film cast who had trouble with his name. Apparently, Gillespie is not a big name in America because they're going, is it Gillespie? Is it? They weren't sure how to... Gillespie, okay? So Craig Gillespie, and written by Marty Noxon, based on the 1985 film by Tom Holland. It stars Anton Yelchin, Colin Farrell, Tony Collette, David Tennant, Imogen Poots, which is a really interesting name, Poots, and Christopher Mintz-Plasse. And here's the trailer, and we'll have a look at this, and then we'll come back and talk about it. Hey, Mom.
Hey, just checking in. What you up to?
Adam Johnson. Adam?
You know Adam's missing, right?
Right, kids aren't coming to school. It happens all the time.
I don't know if you're paying attention to roll call, but he's not the only one that's gone.
You're nuts.
This is my son, Charlie, and his girlfriend.
Hi. So Jerry is our new neighbor.
Hey.
Hey.
Now listen to me. We graphed up all the disappearances. That's you right there in the center next to his house. I really hate to be the one to tell you this, but that guy, your neighbor?
Jerry.
Yeah, he's a vampire.
That is a terrible vampire name. Jerry?
I've been watching you. Your mom, there's a kind of neglect, gives off a scent. And your girl, she's ripe. It's on you to look out for them, because there are a lot of bad people out there, Charlie.
What's that?
I'm gonna end him or he's gonna end me. That's how it's gonna be.
Charlie, he's gonna find me.
I'm counting on it. You smell that? It's your fear.
Shoot him! Hit him!
Did I kill him?
Hopefully.
Okay, let me just start by saying, when we saw the first trailer for this, I put doom and gloom all over this film. All right, I mean, let's be absolutely honest here and say that I really didn't have high hopes for this at all.
And look, you have a reason to. It's like the guy that constantly gets screwed over by girlfriends, or vice versa for girls to guys. It's like there is a certain expectation there.
Well, not just that. The biggest issue I had was, for those who have seen the original Fright Night, the flavor of the original Fright Night was a horror comedy. And it was a very funny film. And it had monsters and it had vampires, it had death, but it also had a lot of laughs. And it basically never took itself too seriously. And that first trailer that came out, not this trailer, but the first trailer that came out, had no humor in it. It was really dark. And I went, boy, they just completely missed the point of this film. So with a lot of trepidation, we trudged in and saw the screening. And it was a very early morning screening. And we went and saw the screening. And that trailer was, it was a film that was so misadvertised.
I'm actually going to completely disagree, because it's like, I think I watched it more recently, like for the first time. Like, I watched it beforehand and I did it as research. And I don't take it as a horror comedy, because...
No, it's not a horror comedy. No, don't get me wrong. The new remake is a horror film in a classic sense of the word, but it has that liberal dose of humor throughout it.
I know, but this is what I actually got out of the original as well. It's like, the original isn't really comedic. It has laughs in it. But it's actually like the horror is, in its standard period of time, quite intensely horror-ish. It's more horror than it is comedy. You have some characters that are almost, as we saw in our opening clip, almost borderline like retarded. It's that comedic.
I love Evil Ed, the original.
But that's the thing. It's like there is kind of that feeling in the series that it is more leaning towards that. And I think that I was going into this film wanting more of a horror than I was a comedy.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the humor is a lot lighter, and I'll agree with you there.
What we should do very quickly, though, is we should help people out, because I just realized we didn't actually give a synopsis on this film.
Go nuts.
Let's just say that for those who don't know anything about Fright Night, it's a remake of a 1985 original. Basically, it's about a teenager, Charlie Brewster, who guesses that his new neighbor, Jerry Dandridge, is a vampire responsible for a string of recent deaths. When no one he knows believes him, he enlists Peter Vincent, a self-proclaimed vampire killer and Las Vegas magician, to help him take down Jerry. And that's basically it in a nutshell. The new film, they did a genius move by setting it in Las Vegas, which actually explains Jerry's nighttime nocturnal activities, which was very clever indeed.
Yeah.
And in the new film, they've taken the Peter Vincent character, instead of being a cheesy late night television host, they've turned him into a real...
basically a Chris Angel.
Chris Angel, yeah. Magician, yeah. And and it's beautiful.
Again, it shows like a group of people that are the group of people that have made this film are really aware of, like, everything's been taken into consideration.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the reasons for these sort of things, like you're saying, the explanations, the fact that they've sat down and instead of just leaving it open, they've gone, well, how can we explain that based on our situation?
Yeah.
It's like there is nothing left untied in this film. You know what I mean? Like, it is such a tight film.
Yes.
And it's like... every scene is done well. Every scene is well organized.
It's beautiful. It's beautifully put together. The script is sensational. Now, Marty Noxon, who wrote the script, is a veteran in this, because Marty Noxon was one of Buffy's writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got Buffy the Vampire Slayer style dialogue and characters. It's got that really beautiful Whedon-esque style to it, where it takes itself seriously, but it knows when to be cheeky. It's really good. I mean, that's the thing. It's just really a solid film. I was so surprised. I came out and just went, I've got to see this again.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've seen the film twice now. I snuck into a second screening. but I've seen the film twice. And and I will own this on Blu-ray without a hesitation.
It's just
beautiful.
Yeah.
And the 3D is fantastic. It's really well put together. I have a clip. This is David Tennant as Peter Vincent.
Right.
Now, funnily enough, Peter Vincent, or David Tennant's character, is really not shown much in the trailers. And I don't know why. He is actually a fairly major character. Now, his best scene has got to be his introduction when he first meets Anton Yelchin.
Yeah.
But that scene is so full of expletives that it's not available online for me. So I do have this one, though, which is one of his clean clips. So here's David Tennant talking to Anton Yelchin and Imogen Poots about this vampire situation.
Don't expect me to join your little Scooby gang. See now.
Look, whatever you got, I'll take it.
That insignia you showed me. It's a species that originated in the Mediterranean. They nest in the earth, and they kill slowly. They keep their victims alive for days. Snackers.
And they turn everyone? They change everyone?
Yeah, I got it.
Well, they're tribal by nature, yeah. It could be trying to turn them all. Replenishes ranks.
Look, how do we kill these guys? This tribe?
You two? You don't. It's a strong breed. You're going to need an army.
There you go.
You see, I love it because it's so nice to see him get to play someone else, because the problem is a lot of these people that get a role or a style get forced to do that for their entire career because people just typecast them. And he's just... and he's always been kind of English TV, and the problem with that is that there is that sort of inbuilt sense in them that it's just play everything really light and really flowery, and it's like, you know, all the Doctor Who's and stuff like that, it's really nice, and he's a great character, but it was just great to see him wild out.
And it was really fun to watch him because it was like Doctor Who grunged out.
It's like Doctor Who after, like, you know, 500 million years of fucking stuff, and he's just over it all. It's like the man has that great, he's vile, he has a great screen presence, he's funny, but he's also kind of a coward, which is great. And it's like, I just loved him as a character, and it was good because we were really worried about him as a character.
Like, well, I was actually really worried about because they weren't showing us anything of him either. They were keeping him so under wraps, and I thought it's very, very odd that they're not showing us the Peter Vincent character. And Tennant didn't disappoint. And I think they kept him under wraps because they wanted a surprise.
Mm.
And he's the highlight of the film. I mean, when he makes his appearance, he's just like his first appearance. I think is I haven't laughed that hard in quite some time. So
yeah.
He's fabulous. Let's also talk about Colin Farrell,
mm-hmm.
Who is
wow!
I mean, he is mesmerizing as the vampire, and he just his speech pattern. You heard him in the trailer where he's like,
especially
"Hey, guys."
That speech towards the mom, like that is just cinema genius. When he is at the door to the house, especially, and he's having the conversation where he won't let him in, but he's trying to get him the beer, and it's like.
And then he goes on about the women. I actually have that clip. Let's actually play that clip because it is a great clip. And you heard a lot of it in the trailer, but you had all the other activity going on. So let's just hear, this is his little speech about Charlie's women, all right? And it give you a really an idea about his speech pattern.
Your mom, she didn't exactly say, but there's a kind of neglect. Gives off a scent. You don't mind my saying you got a lot on your shoulders for a kid. The two of you, alone, and your girl, Amy, she's ripe. I bet there's a line of guys dying to pluck that. Your mom, too. You don't see it. Maybe you do, but she's putting it out. It's on you to look out for them. You up for that, guy?
Guy. I love him. He calls everybody guy. Hey, guy.
Yeah, no. It's really good. And
he's just fabulous.
It's the thing that I love about this film is it's we talk about horror movies made for horror fans, and this is just that in the truest sense of the world. It's like the scenes where you need to do something quickly with good explanation, but you need it to be that kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of a humor. They've got that. You see that in the trailer with him with the iPhone out, with the lock-picking app for how to get through a door. It's like there is this throughout the series. It plays almost every type of horror throughout this film. Like you have suspense horror, you have violent horror, you know, like.
But it's really interesting because in this modern age of the horror resurgence that's going on right now with your Saw films and your and you know and Hostel and so forth, this is an old school throwback. This is classic horror. That we would have seen in the mid to late 80s. We would have seen this in the early 2000s as well. And you sit there and you look at it and go, this is just, it's so much fun to watch because it's never, you never get to a point like when you watch Saw or you watch Hostel, you're kind of like going, yes, I'm scared, but oh God, do I really want to see that? Oh my God. Oh, do I really want to see that? You know, there's none of that in this. You're just in there with these characters and you're having a ball with them.
Yeah.
And even when they're fighting the monsters and everything else and your adrenaline is running, you're never uncomfortable. You want to watch the film. You want to have fun with them. Look, I highly recommend this. I think if you are...
I think if you've ever watched a horror movie and like ever in your life, even if you're not a horror fan, you've ever watched even one horror film and gone, that was all right. You have to watch this film. Yeah. Like we have friends and people that are regulars to the show will know Dave Kaczynski, and Dave Kaczynski is the most anti-horror person you've ever seen in your life. And he went to see this film because of him having to review it. He was so excited by the three-quarter mark, he was already lining up his Blu-ray buy in his mind. He was like, I am doing this. I am getting this film because it is so fun. It is so well put together, and it's so enjoyable. It's everything that's good. It's like, these are the films that make you proud to be a horror fan.
Yeah.
Like, and
and if you're not a horror fan, this is a good introduction to it all. This is the one, this is the one you go see with the horror fans, and basically they're saying, you should come and see this. You can rest assured to see this one.
Absolutely.
Because this isn't going to gross you out. It's not going to freak you out. It's not going to keep you up at nights. Yeah. It's just fun, you know? Yeah. It's a little bit like when we were talking about Final Destination.
Five. It's number five. Much.
It's Final Destination is actually a little bit harder edge than this.
Yeah,
but it's still, it's not completely gross out. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just a fun, rollicking ride in the horror.
And it's aware not to take itself too seriously. Yeah. And can I also just say that the small wink to the camera from the original film that they put into this movie is just brilliant. Like, it's so subtle. It's fantastic. Like, I love when a series can do it without having it too in your face.
Yeah.
Like, if you weren't aware, you would go past that scene without even knowing.
Yeah, because the scene works as a scene if you don't know the homage that they're putting forward. Yeah. And if you do know, you get a smile on your face.
Yeah, and can I also say that man has not aged well?
No. Just put it out. Now, I will actually point out that I think it was my darling mother who actually said, boy, you can kind of tell when an actor's career has started to tank when they have to start turning up in remakes. But with that all being said, well worth going to see. I'm assuming that you're going to recommend this as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely, hands down. There is no doubt that this is, this was a good time. This was probably one of the most fun cinema going trips I've had in quite some time. And I'll let you know, from somebody who's seen it twice now, that I actually liked it better the second time around.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Second time around?
Yeah, second time around is actually better because no longer are you anticipating anything. Now you're just enjoying the film, and it's still a fun ride.
Oh, dude, absolutely. And I have to say that, this one will be a day one Blu-ray purchase.
Yes, me
like,
too.
It will just happen. It's like, I need that special edition. I need every special feature about this film.
I plan on going to the cinema again.
Oh, yeah,
I want to see it again.
I have to take Celine to this.
Yeah, you got to take it to see it. It's great. Yeah. And let me also tell you, we're going to play the opening track called Welcome to Fright Night. We're going to play the track in the end credits with this show, but the soundtrack is also well worth buying. The soundtrack is awesome. It's fantastic. And it's from the same guy who composed the soundtrack to Iron Man 1.
Yeah.
And I was never a huge fan of the Iron Man 1 soundtrack, but he really excelled himself.
Dude, no, I'm on sorry, this film. Man. No. Great soundtrack.
I'm not talking about the songs. I'm talking about the incidental score.
All right.
The incidental score of the original Iron Man was actually a little disappointing. My son really liked it, but I thought it was just a little disappointing. But what's his name? Jodi, I think it is. Ramin Jodi did a much better job with this film. I mean, he was really in tune with this film and really, really captured it. Yep. So we'll play that at the end credits and you can actually have a look at that.
Cool.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about news. And really, news is we've got a couple trailers, but there is one piece of news in the middle. But we've got to talk about this trailer because this is bizarre. Now, I'm a huge Cameron Crowe fan. I love Almost Famous. Mm-hmm. I love Say Anything. I really like Jerry Maguire. You know, I thought Jerry Maguire was really good. Okay, Vanilla Sky, maybe not. You know what I mean? And as a writer...
I'd go further than maybe not.
and as a writer, I really liked Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know, so I really like Cameron Crowe. I have no problem with Cameron Crowe. And then I saw this trailer and I thought, this is something different. I want to see this. So let me get this straight. I'm not putting it down. It's just really different.
Yeah.
So have a look at this trailer and tell me what you think. This is called We Bought a Zoo.
Hustle, hustle, we're late.
Dad!
Oh, man. All right. All right. Bye.
Bye, Dad.
I thought maybe dinner for three.
Thank you.
For four.
Hey, Rosie. Am I doing anything right?
You're handsomer than the other dads. Lots of them don't have hair. So that's good.
Attempt to start over.
I shall try to start over.
Sunlight. Joy.
I salute you in the great times we had together, and I quit.
This is exactly what we've been looking for.
It's a bit complicated.
What's so complicated about this place?
It's a zoo.
Yay! I'm gonna live here.
Welcome to your zoo.
This is what you want. It's not what I want.
At the risk of stating the obvious, you're insane.
The sellers say you don't even need any special knowledge to run a zoo. What you need is a lot of heart.
You are gonna love your new enclosure.
We need somebody who can take charge of this place, or else we and all these animals are gone.
I'm trying to give the kids an authentic American experience.
Stop before zebras get involved.
There's two zebras. There's a lion. There's 47 animal species.
It'll never last.
If you stick with me, I will give this everything.
Well, that's good enough for me.
I think you're incredibly pretty. Please don't take offense if I don't hit on you.
Be offended if you did.
Thank you. I think.
I like the animals, but I love the humans.
All you need is 20 seconds of insane courage. And I promise you, something great will come of it.
Keep coming.
So what do you think?
I think that looks fantastic.
And it looks really cute, but it's just, it's not him.
No, but it really kind of is, because, I mean, like, if you look past, like, almost famous as the, you know, like, Edge and The Rock and stuff like that, essentially it is a movie about heart. Hmm. And a lot of his films are. Like, there's heart to all his films, and this is just exactly that. Like, it's one of... He seems like the kind of guy, like, you look at the stories of kind of, like, what he writes about. It's like he takes an idea and finds something about it that he really likes. And it's like he's obviously found that story about... a guy who moved out and started running a zoo and went, this is fantastic. This would be a cool concept to make a film out of. Matt Damon is like, he seems good in it. Matt Damon always has to prove himself to me, because there's two Matt Damons in my mind.
There are two Matt Damons.
There are two Matt Damons. You get the Matt Damon that isn't paying attention. You get the Matt Damon that is paying attention.
You get the Bourne, the informant Matt Damon.
Goddamn right.
Or you get the Green Zone Matt Damon.
Exactly. And it's like, it just depends on, you know, sort of like whether or not it's a film for the money, or whether it's, you know, it's a Michael Caine thing all over again.
Yeah,
it really is. It's like he's either picking the role to extend the house, or he's picking the role because he really wants to. That seems like the latter, so I'm happy. I like that, dude.
I'd like to point out that we have somebody in our chat room. Hello, Northy. I didn't even see you there. Sorry, I was so used to there not being anybody in the chat room. Welcome to our test broadcast. Yeah. All right. So, look, I think it looks interesting. I will go see it, absolutely. Mm. But you're right. I think there is something to be wary about. Films like this walk a very fine line. Mm. Because if they take one step too far, they're just saccharine.
Yep.
And he's going to have to walk a really fine line with this. Especially when you... What is it? Alfred Hitchcock always said, never work with... No, W.C. Fields said, never work with children or animals. And he's working with both.
Yeah. That's a script that sends him right into those locations. Yeah.
Do you know what he's heading into here? He's heading into early Spielberg territory here. So, and Spielberg masterfully kind of handles that sort of stuff. I'm not sure if Crow's ever worked with this kind of combination.
It will be interesting.
Now, from that to something that's completely opposite to that, Bruce Campbell was recently tweeting, because somebody was actually saying, with this Evil Dead remake that is happening, what's happening, who's going to play Ash and blah, blah, blah. And he said something very interesting that I thought, which was, no Ash at this time. So apparently the new Evil Dead remake is not going to be about Ash. He said, no Ash character currently, was one tweet that he put out. And he actually put out another one that said, remake is a retelling. All bets are off and all involved love the new approach.
Well, look, I'm almost more comfortable with that, because it's like, it's kind of like what we were talking about with the Star Wars thing. It's like, if you take the world and you go into a different place,
that's
with
right,
it,
yeah.
You don't suffer the problems with prequel or sequel either.
So it's actually like, something I forgot to say about Fright Night. So let's just throw this in here, because now we're talking about remakes. So let's throw this in and say that Fright Night is exactly the right formula for a remake.
What that is
you take the original intent, the original tone of that film, and then turn it into something original.
Yeah.
And that is when remakes work, right? Mm. It's when you try and either carbon copy it, or you try and completely stray away from what the original intent of the film was, or its original tone, then it fails, because you're not even trying to remake an original film. So Fright Night had that exact right chemistry, right? Yeah. It took the tone and intent and turned it into something fresh and original.
Yeah.
And that might be what they're doing with Evil Dead. Take the tone, the idea, but get away from the characters.
Sam Raimi is not the kind of guy that would give up a series or even let someone touch a movie like this unless he was, you know, relatively satisfied with the concept that had come out. And these are the best kinds of people. These are the intelligent people in film that come to you and go, you know what, man? Like, when you're selling somebody a movie like this, it's not like the Friday the 13th series or stuff like this. When you look through, on average, this stuff is relatively rubbish. And it's like, they'll give it to anyone, because why wouldn't you? It's like, essentially, it's just going to be it's just going to be, you know, what it is. It's just going to be a basic kind of run through of the, you know, the concept, guy with a mask and a hockey mask and a knife carving people up. With a series like this, it's like you have pretty much no failures, in my opinion. It's like you like or you don't like Army of Darkness, but what it set out to achieve, it accomplishes.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes.
And it's like he has been involved with all of them. He's not just going to let this series go. And this is why people that are just immediately poo-pooing this concept, I'm like, no, give this a chance. We've gone through that many rubbish, horror sequels. Fright Night has reinvigorated me. I'm willing to let people do this. Mm. It's like, show me what you can
show
do.
Show me the money.
Exactly. And someone would have to wow Sam Raimi. Like, someone would have to come in and be like, I have a concept. I'm throwing your series to the wind. This is what I want to
do. Well, what I also love about it is the fact that Sam Raimi is actually writing the remake.
Exactly.
So he's behind it. He knows what he's doing. So the producing team behind it are the same producing team as the first Evil Dead. So it's Bruce Campbell, it's Sam Raimi, it's Robert Tapere. So it's like you've got the same producing team behind it. They brought in a fresh director.
That's what I'm saying. And it's like that man would have to, because that's the catalyst right there. It's like you write a script and that's cool, but it's like when you're putting a new director on something like this, he'd have to trust him.
And what's interesting is he's a visual director, because apparently he's a commercial director. So he's a very, very visual. His name is Fede Alvarez.
All I'm going to say for that is, so far, District 9 proved that you can take someone like that and make them great.
Yeah.
So,
well, let's not forget that this is where Ridley Scott came from as well. So Ridley Scott was a commercial director. So that visual element could really... Because remember, the Evil Dead films are very visual. They're very... sight gag-ish, so to speak, with all of the stuff that's going on. They were never very strong when it came to characters or dialogue. That was never the point. It was always about Ash and all these weird, wacky things happening to him, right? Mm. So we take Ash out of the equation, because let's face it, nobody's going to play Ash like Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
So it's a good move. Take that character out. Don't try and reinvent that. Try and do something different with it. Bring back the Evil Dead, put different people in front of them.
Damn right.
There you go.
Right.
That's the way to do it. All right, no, I can go with that. I'm fine with that. All right, we've put this off long enough. All right, let's brace ourselves for impact, guys. Yes. The Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn, Part 1. Here is the full-length trailer. I don't even know why we're... Oh, by the way, I had this great screenshot of Bruce Campbell, which I never brought up. But look at this.
Oh, dude. My favorite Bruce Campbell moment ever.
Yeah, isn't that just fantastic? All right, so now I'm still delaying. I'm trying to delay this as long as I can.
Just do it. Let's get this over. It's like a Band-Aid, man. Let's pull it off.
All I got to say is, Josh, we've still got about 63 days or something before we have to review this piece of crap, all right? And the good news is that we actually can kind of sit back and let somebody else fly on this one, because we're going to have Robin on that show, who's been writing all those Twilight stuff. She's coming on the show for the Breaking Dawn show, and she can let fly, and we can sit back. Mm. All right, so here it is.
You ready?
Just don't let me fall down.
Never.
I, Edward Cullen, take you, Bella Swan.
For better or for worse.
To love.
To cherish. As long as we both shall live.
This is how I'll remember you. Pink cheeks. Heartbeat. I think I'd be used to telling you goodbye by now. Last night was the best night of my existence. Inside out.
Your heart will give out before you can deliver.
You did this.
I can't see Bella's future anymore.
We don't know what they bred. We have to protect the tribe before it's too late.
You're the enemy now. Sam won't hesitate. You will be slaughtered.
And starving you by the
the hour.
I'm the one who'll lose you.
You have to accept what is.
You've given me no choice.
Get ready. They're coming for Bella.
They're not gonna touch her.
If you kill her, you kill me.
Point, if we're actually doing it like in the book, that's when he chews the baby out. Isn't that right? That's what I want to see. I want to see him give her a vampire C-section. That looks awful.
I just don't... Like, I'm just going to go in there like I do every time and just sick and just and
you know
sort
what the
of
worst part,
float
though?
Into the seat and just...
The worst part of it all, though, Josh, is that we're going to sit there, we're going to sit through it, and at a certain point, it's just going to end because it's only part one. Yeah. It's another one of those fucking Harry Potter part one shit things where it's just going to end and we're going to be left hanging and it's like, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
I hate this splitting stuff into two films. I'm so over it, the splitting stuff into two films.
Man. It's just getting crazy now. It's just getting too much. Just too much.
No, it's not good. Not good. All right. Shake it off. Shake it off. I was just saying to Josh during that clip, though, that we should have just left the mics open and done a running commentary. That would have been funny.
Yeah.
Chris from Bris Vegas, welcome to the chat room. Welcome to our little test broadcast here. We will be back to normal next week, but thank you for joining us. We've got people in the chat room, Josh. Yay!
We still have friends.
We do. We haven't driven them all away yet. All right. This week's list of five is Josh's list of five, which I love. Mm-hmm. And it's our list of five favorite horror characters. And I've written here, it doesn't matter about plot or quality. Every film has that one standout character that you love. And here are our five favorite from horror films. And I'm going to bring up my list because my list is not up at the moment. There we go. Josh, this is your list. You can start us off.
Sure, man. Okay, so starting at number five is a character that I love because of her impact. It's not so much because at its time, girl protagonists weren't exactly, you know, a standard thing. And it's like, she may not be the best actress, but she made her way through a couple of the films. And
I think I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, and on top of that, she is... real warrior quality. Like, it's like most girls in these films are always the scream victims. They're the ones that run away and stuff like this. This girl turned around, figured out a way to deal with this person, and then dealt with them. And it's Nancy from Friday the 13th. Nightmare on Elm Street. It's like, I love her.
One, three, and six?
No. And New Nightmare.
Yeah, New Nightmare.
And New Nightmare is great because it's also a great realization character, and it's her on and off set. And, like, you know, for horror quality, this is an actress that played the character out well.
I agree with you. She actually almost made my list. Yeah. She's a terrible actress, but the character of Nancy was a solid character.
Exactly. And she was well written, and she has good moments. Mm. And look, I mean, she... defeated him on multiple occasions, and that's good in my books.
Nancy from A Nightmare on Elm Street. Very good. That's Nightmare on Elm Street original. Not this new shit
but
thing.
There is no new original.
All right, my number five is Palmer, played by David Clennon, from The Thing.
Yeah.
He's the stoner. Chariots of the Gods, man.
You know what, dude?
I almost
had a Thing reference myself because I was going to do the black guy that rolls around on the roller skates.
I
will never forget him. He is a memorable character.
Now, he's not Windows. He's the other one.
Yep. Windows is David.
Keith David is Giles.
Giles, that's it.
Where you been, Giles? Palmer is my favorite character in that film because I just love that where he's where they're talking about the aliens. And this is John Carpenter's remake of The Thing, where he's sitting there and they're saying, you know, are you trying to tell us that it's, you know, extraterrestrial? And he just sits forward and he's stoned the whole film.
He just goes,
Chariots of the Gods, man. They practically own South America. I just love him. Oh, he's a fabulous character. Line. All right, you're number four.
Oh, my number four set black people back probably at least 20 years at the time of its release. It's a horrible film. He's a horrible character. But he's so memorable because he's just disgustingly typecasted. Like, he's just disgustingly the black horror victim. Like,
oh, I'm dying now.
Oh, dude. And Friday the 13th, 8 is the film, and the character is Julius. Now, this yes. guy is like a boxer. He's like a mildly coked out weirdo. Like, he's just so aggressive, it's not funny. And then has a fight scene with Jason on a rooftop where he just punches him until he runs out of energy and then gets his head punched off. I will always remember Julius. He will always be on every list that has something to do with horror because he is amazingly
bad. Yeah, I believe Richard and you were talking about him a few weeks ago as well.
Yeah.
My number four is from a film I don't even know if you've seen. 1981 film. It's the character of Dewey Wilson from The Wolfen. Now, this is Albert Finney. This is the star of the film.
Yeah.
He plays the detective who's looking into what is causing these deaths and so forth. He's such a hardened cop, and there's a one scene in particular that I'll always remember, and if you ever see the film The Wolfen, there's a scene where he's in the morgue, and he's watching an autopsy.
Yeah.
And he's trying to wait for the results for the autopsy, and there's this wonderful moment, and he's eating these little chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
And he puts one in his mouth at one point, and it's just sitting there in his lips, and you can hear the autopsy happening, but you can't see it, because the camera's right on his face. And just as you start to hear the bone saw kick in, he just sucks the cookie into his mouth. And it's like almost like he's trying to distract himself from what he's seeing on screen. He's a wonderful character, and he's just so grisly and gnarly throughout the whole film. Love him. Love that film. If you haven't seen The Wolfen, it's a real lost film.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely go have a look at that.
I'll have to dig it up.
Interestingly enough, a bit of trivia for him. Michael Wadley, who directed The Wolfen, has only directed two feature films. Mm. And his first film was Woodstock, the concert film, and then he directed, like 20 years later, he directed The Wolfen. And he's a real hippie. And so when you watch The Wolfen, the thing that really gets you is that it is really an environmental statement. It's all about, you know, mankind encroaching on nature. But it's based on a horror novel about wolves, and it's really, really good. It's a surprising film. All right, your number three.
My number three is Dr. Sam Loomis.
All right, I'm going to...
Should we pause that and come back to it?
Did I actually put him on here? No, he's in my honorary mentions. Okay. I actually put him in my honorary mentions. Dr. Sam Loomis, Donald Pleasance.
Yeah, Donald Pleasance goes to the top of my list, goes straight into my list because of watching it this week.
Yes,
because
he's fabulous.
This character survives these films. He is gnarly. He has, like,
whenever I think of
flesh.
Sam Loomis, you can't think of Sam Loomis without thinking of death. You don't know what death is.
And the great thing is he plays it so straight and so incredibly wildly outrageous that every
that you think
film,
he's a psychopath.
Exactly. And every film gets more. And there is something almost menacing about him.
Yeah.
In the way that he slowly grows more and more insane.
Well, he's a psychiatrist carrying a handgun.
He's a psychiatrist carrying a handgun following the essence of evil in a body. Like, this man is aware of how dangerous this person is. And the further he gets through, the less he's worried about everyone else, and the more he's worried about putting this
guy down.
It's
an obsession, absolutely.
Exactly. And it's like, his character is well-made, his character is well-developed, his character is reasonably well-acted. I'm not saying he's a great actor, but when you put him up against
I love Donald Pleasance, and I think Donald Pleasance, I mean, he will be missed. I believe he died. But, you know, Donald Pleasance is he is the soul of Halloween. If you don't have him, Halloween is just another stalker film.
Exactly.
And it's Loomis that actually makes the film work.
He's the one that dramatizes it. He's the one that when you're just sitting there going, thinking about the kills and thinking about the thing, he's the one reminding you that it's like, this man is pure evil.
Yeah.
And he must be stopped. And it's like, without that character, the film is just a slasher film. It's like, he is everything that was that series.
Absolutely. He made my honorary mentions purely because I got a few others that I put in here as well. My number three is Severin, played by Bill Paxton, who's the vampire in Near Dark.
To this day,
Bill Paxton, for me, that is his greatest performance. That scene in the country bar where they slaughter everyone in the bar, and he's got his spurs on, and he's got a great line when he goes, "I hate it when they ain't been shaved." He is just horrible, but he is mesmerizing to watch.
Yeah.
To this day, Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark, that is Bill Paxton's role tour de force. That is what he will always, for me, I mean, there's Hudson and everything else, but that's the film that he is like, just excels at.
He's
fantastic. Number three. No, number two.
Two. Well, two is where I finally get into the violent, you know, sort of antagonists in these films. Pinhead is my choice great for character. Number two. Only because I've seen them all. And when I say all, I should probably stop at four because he doesn't really grow after that. But essentially, the arc kind of finishes at four. But it's like you have a demon, you have, you know, this is back when these artists were kind of artists. Yeah, you know, it's like they were creating horrifying looking death on screen. And, you know, like, that's about where it ends for me. Like, Gorno starts
after that line. We have to give full credit to the novelist turned director who created Pinhead.
Clive Barker.
Clive Barker. I mean, Clive Barker's imagination was out there. I mean, the stuff that he created.
Absolutely. And the artist he worked with, the visual artist.
Because it's the same thing with when he followed that up with a film called Nightbreed, which is actually nowhere near as strong a film. But the characters and the creations in that film are amazing.
And it's that era that was. It was when splatter was being developed in the right way, as opposed to becoming really, really intentionally overgross. But the character of Pinhead is actually quite an interesting one. The way that he came to be Pinhead and
his there's tragedy behind him.
Exactly. And the further you go through the series, you start to grow on that and find out kind of his past. And, you know, there is sort of two parts to him as you go through the series. He's a very well-developed character and he deserves his thing. And, I mean, the series do get stupid and he does have some dumb moments, but especially as an actor, he just keeps going. Yeah. He's just like, he believes in the character.
Incredibly iconic about the way he looks. And
it's that upright stance. It's the hands held in the middle of the chest and it's the head. Yeah. Like, it's all in the head. Yeah,
no, he's fabulous. He's a great, great character. Great choice.
Yeah.
My number two is Ashley J. Williams, or otherwise known as Ash in The Evil Dead. So funnily enough, we bring him back in. Bruce Campbell brought a character to life that was larger than life, was amazing to watch, and you were there with him. Look, Bruce Campbell may not have a range as an actor, but what he does is perfect, you know? And Ash is just like the culmination of everything that Bruce Campbell is. I mean, and everything that you watch with Bruce Campbell in it, you just see Ash, you know?
Exactly,
and
but in the best ways. It's the best of all of his acting.
I actually was kind of weighing up which film, because, you know, it's a series of films. I think the highlight for me, though, is Evil Dead 2. I think Evil Dead 2 is where sit there and go, that is...
Yeah,
Ash at his peak.
Damn, you know? Right.
When he goes groovy, that's probably it for me. All right, you're number one. Hit me with it.
My number one is, now, look, I'm sorry, but this is going to take a little bit of explanation. My number one is Jason Voorhees. Now,
no, that's fair.
Look, it is, but some people won't agree, and I need to give this some depth. The reason is that along the way, we are aware that there is a whole lot of shit and there is some really bad incarnations and stuff like that. But when you look at the iconic, where he gets to, where he becomes the iconic Jason, you have a character in the first one, which is only mentioned. In the second one, he shows up, but, you know, there's really no presence to him, because essentially he's just a guy that is wearing like a sack over his head.
Yep.
But it's like when you get to three and he gets the mask and it's the moment where he becomes who he is.
The iconic Jason.
The iconic Jason.
And you know how, just to interrupt you for a minute, you know how powerful that character is?
Yeah.
Is the fact that people identify Jason Voorhees as the hockey mask wearing killer in films where he wasn't even the hockey mask wearing killer.
Exactly.
Everybody sits there and talks about Friday the 13th Part 1 and 2, and he didn't have the hockey mask. Or in the Part 1, he wasn't even the killer, you know?
Exactly. And it's like, but this just such a menace to that mask. And it's like, I was talking recently about, because somebody was saying they prefer Michael Myers, and I was explaining the reason I don't prefer Michael Myers is because Michael Myers' mask doesn't sit on his face right. This is one thing about his character, is the fact that it's a mask and it's just a normal person underneath that mask, but Jason becomes that mask.
Yeah.
Like, that mask...
I'm in the camp of a Michael Myers fan. I think Michael Myers is a really forbidding character as well, but I see where you're coming from.
It's like the menace comes through in the fact that there is no... Like, there is, in a lot of scenes in the Halloween series, there is a lot of series where that mask almost takes on a different persona with this kind of almost a fragileness to him because of the fact that it's white. You can do that. You can have him kind of almost standoffish, like a boy that's never been told off correctly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a thing, whereas Jason is just pure evil from start to finish. Yeah. Like, from the moment that
there's something supernatural about him from the minute you first see him in the first film.
Exactly.
So there is something about him that makes him different.
Exactly. You know? And it's like underneath that mask, you know, there's something, yes. equally as grotesque. And that's why
he's evil on two legs.
Yeah. He is the best horror character ever made, in my opinion.
All right. And I will disagree with you because I'm going to say my number one is Seth Brundle.
Oh, dude. But you know what? That to me is an acting.
Montage. And that's exactly what makes it work is the fact that Jeff Goldblum instills so much life into that character. But that is what made The Fly remake work. It was Jeff Goldblum's central character of Seth Brundle, he was the heart, he was the terror, he was everything about that film. You take Seth Brundle out of that equation, and the film is just another film. And so I look at it.
Yes,
and go,
we know that there was a sequel. We saw that he was everything that made that. Yeah. Look, and I totally agree that he is an amazing character. Like, it's one of those things.
It's that frantic freneticism that builds. He starts off nervous energy. And as it goes on, it's almost becoming like a...
It's like a man that's had too many coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and it becomes that kind of a like twitchy nature.
And then you start to get that degradation to his character where he starts to fall apart. Mm. But then there's another strength. And so you actually see this ebb and flow through that character that... Yes, it's a masterful performance from Jeff Goldblum, but it's also a masterfully written character from Cronenberg where he basically has made this... two-dimensional, I mean, if you've ever seen the original 1950s Fly, it's a really two-dimensional idea, and he's made it a three-dimensional character, And I think that really, it weighs heavily on Cronenberg for what he did with that film. Yeah. So Seth Brundle from the remake of The Fly is my favorite. We have had Chris from Brist Vegas in our chat room and said, Wolfen, great film. There you go. Somebody else has seen it. And he says Daniel Harris, for sure. Daniel Harris from Halloween.
Yeah.
All right, now, 4 and 5. Is that right?
Which one?
Daniel Harris, little girl. It was Halloween 4 and 5 or 5 and 6 or...
I think, no, it's 4 and 5 because 4 is the one where at the end she...
That's right, yeah. Turns. So it's a 4 and 5. Yeah.
So it's 4 and 5.
So 4 and 5, yeah. I quite like Daniel Harris. She was quite good in that too. And
very cute kid as well. Yeah, very good actress, actually. Very good. As a child actress.
Very good actress. And what do we got here? No, that's all. And he says David Cronenberg is great in Nightbreed. Yes, David Cronenberg actually did an acting turn in Nightbreed, and he was creepy as hell. So yes, he was very good. The other film that David Cronenberg is really good in as an actor, also creepy as hell, was in To Die For. If you've ever seen that, he played the strange little hitman that turns up to take her out, and he's just evil in that film. And he's only in it for like, I don't know, 5 minutes maybe at top, and he just burns a hole in the screen. He's just amazing. All right, good list. I do have one honorary mention. I've actually got two, but one we've already mentioned. One was Dr. Sam Loomis. Yeah. And the other one that neither of us mentioned and I think really does deserve mentioning is Jack Torrance from The Shining.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson's turn as that character, because that is... We were talking about this morning before the show. My lovely wife Katie and I were just saying that he was mesmerizing. That was like... That was Jack Nicholson at... peak performance. And there is real menace to the whole Torrance character.
He was scary.
Yeah, because I mean they made a television remake of The Shining and it didn't have any power at all.
No, because Jack Nicholson was borderline psychotic. like for real. Like I mean Celine has brought it up on the show before that he actually was getting into characters, swinging that axe around dangerously around characters and crew. The man took himself to insanity to play that role.
And it shows. It really does. It's it's an amazing...
I don't think he ever quite came back from it.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway,
moving along. Great list. I don't want to get killed by Jack Nicholson when I meet him, so I was just kidding.
Terrific list. Great idea. I'm going to go back and watch a few of these films now. I want to go back and watch the Halloween films. They've inspired me.
Yes.
Once I finish Star Wars. Gotta get through I gotta go through 3 more Star Wars films and then what is it? 9 hours of bonus features and then
Hooray.
All right. If you would disagree or agree with anything we've had to say today.
I'm not gonna do it today. I'm not gonna say fuck you.
You just did. send your feedback
not
to feedback.
With any intent.
Okay. Send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com. Or you can drop us a voicemail 0280113167. We actually have no feedback today because I think people have not known what's going on. So we haven't had a lot sent in. So, and Christian Bisvega says, where was Norman Bates?
Norman Bates?
That's a good point. All those Psycho films, Psycho 1 in particular, great character.
Yeah,
no, yeah, great character. I'll put him on honorary mentions for you. I actually forgot about Norman Bates, to tell you the truth. That's why.
I agree, but anyway.
I think Norman Bates was a great character.
I think he was a great character, but I think compared to the list. Well, that's true. No offense, man. I don't mean you any disrespect by this, but I mean compared to Nancy, compared to that. No, sorry.
We'll put him in the honorary mentions because I actually forgot about him. And I think if Richard had been here, Norman Bates probably would have been on the list. All right. So no feedback today. Do want to remind you, if you want to get merchandise or follow us on Twitter or follow our Facebook fan page or do any of those things, just go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us button and you can follow us. And if you go to the contact us page, you can actually find an email form if you want to send feedback in. That's a nice, easy way of doing stuff. Mm-hmm. If you want to get your geek on, go find Geek Actually on iTunes, or we also record that here live.
We will be back doing that.
Next week, everything is back to normal, which means hours of show notes again. And I want to put out an apology to Delta Knight, who actually did send me all links and everything this week, thinking that we were doing it, and we actually didn't do it. So I should have gotten back to you sooner, and that would have... Chris from Brisbane is supposed to say, Josh, speaking of horror, did you catch up with Bereavement
yet?
No,
but it is currently in a... How do I say this? It's currently being sourced.
Good. There you go. Yes. So we will find it and we will watch it.
Yeah.
All right. Josh, tell us a little bit more about where people can find out more about you.
Well, rawdlc.com is a gaming website. Head over and check that out. There's all sorts of great stuff over there. Gamesprom, recently I have an article up there for a Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 multiplayer event I went to recently, and there will soon be something about the event that I went to for ID Software, which was a night with Tim Willits, who was one of the original team, well, almost original team of the people that created this company.
Fantastic.
Which was very interesting, and there will be a write-up on there on the next few days.
Excellent. Fantastic. Now, as I say, Richard didn't get to join us today, but I have his plug here in the show notes. So I'll just say, if you want to find out more about Richard, go to realbits.com or therealbits.com. Mm-hmm. Now, Charlie and Brad, our friends, are back. They're over at reboundradio.com, and you'll find the new podcast, Good Day Sir. And Real Junkies, we have been off air now not doing live shows for 3 weeks.
I was about to say, I'm like, we are on air.
Yeah, we're on air, and we did do Film Actuallys over this time. I don't know how, but we did them. I got to say, it's been like, you know, what is it? This is the third week now, right? And they still haven't got a new episode. Up.
It's weird.
Real Junkies boys, where are you? Weekendronan.com is their website. Send them an email and say, dudes, where's our new episode? All right, so the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies, find them on iTunes. Now, our cover art is by Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. Thank you very much. And we are closing, as I said, we're closing the show this week with a track from Ramin Djawadi's original score for Fright Night. The track is actually called Welcome to Fright Night, and it's fantastic. I think that's it. I don't have any more. Do you have any more?
Nope.
Well, in that case, we'll say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week at the proper time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.